Hello, friends. The Faith and Imagination podcast debuted this past February. When it began, we were really improvising as we went along. Who would we invite as guests? How often we release episodes? Could we make these conversations worth listening to? Would we find an audience? We discovered answers to these questions as we've gone along. Yes, we seem to have found an audience and we're grateful. Yes, the conversations seem to be engaging thanks to the extraordinary people who've agreed to talk with us. And we found a rhythm of releasing 3 or so episodes per month. But it also seemed to us that given the Faith and Imagination podcast is sponsored by the BYU Humanities Center at Brigham Young University, it might make some sense to hew a little more closely to the university calendar. This means releasing episodes all during the school year, beginning in late August, and then taking a break at some point beginning in mid to late spring. We think this will allow us to turn our attention to other academic tasks during the summer and also publicize podcasts during the school year in ways that will make more scholars and students aware of them as well as the public. So, this episode marks the conclusion of season one. Season two will begin only a few weeks from now. If you're interested, for the remainder of this episode, I'll be talking with two of the podcast's three producers, Sam Jacob, our former Humanities Center intern, and Abby Thatcher, our current Humanities Center intern. The show's other producer, Brooke Brown, the Humanities Center assistant, prefers to remain behind the scenes. We'll be reviewing how the podcast originated and sharing some thoughts about our guests, the topics, and the relationship between faith and imagination. Abby and Sam will play the role of interviewers, also adding their own commentary during our conversation. So I'll pass things over to you guys and let you guide the discussion.
Well, thank you. We're excited to be here today. Matt, as we begin, really each of our podcast episodes, you've asked this question of each of our guests, and they've been so kind as to answer. But how do you imagine your faith in the context of your life and work?
I'm always interested in this question and hearing from our guests, and I'm often moved by what they have to share. The answer is that my faith profoundly informs my life and work. It shapes my life and work, helps direct my life and work. Really, it's because of my faith that I pursued a life in higher education in the first place. I was a full-time missionary, you know, for the church when I was 19 and 20, and that opened my imagination, really, to the mystery of people and the mystery of the world and of God's ongoing relationship with his creation. That's what really led me to ask some large questions and to pursue the study of the humanities in college. Like, what is this human mystery that I've been encountering in France? You know? So for me, faith is a creed. It's a set of beliefs and religious practices, but faith is also a sensibility. It's a responsiveness to the things of God. That can mean theology, it can mean care for others, it can mean the cultivation of a spiritual life. Faith has been an important point of connection that I've felt with our guests, most of whom belong to denominations or religions other than mine. So religion can sometimes divide people, but faith, and more broadly a spiritual life, can unite them. It does for me.
Yeah, I love that response, and I love how you define faith as something that's active and really is an affirmation of a way of life. Thinking about the beginning of your podcast project, and Sam, I'll also direct this question to you because you were here at the beginning. What inspired you both to undertake a podcast project, and really, what was your experience at the beginning?
Can I just say one word answer, and then hear from Sam? COVID.
Absolutely. we could end the answer there, but yeah, I think the onset of the pandemic, from my position, it was disappointing. Obviously, I was really excited to move into an active role in participating and being a part of organizing the events that our Humanities Center here at BYU usually organizes and puts together. And alas, we weren't going to have those same sorts of discussions and conversations with visiting scholars, with scholars at our own institution. And luckily, you know, we had some good, I think, personnel together and a lot of free time as well, being home and not necessarily being maybe the word confined to the usual way of doing things. You know, when that gets taken away from you, you have to seek new ways of carrying on the type of work you want to do. And podcasting just seemed like a really exciting way to energize and create still good, I guess we could use the word content, but good conversations like the ones that we've been having at the center for years.
Yeah, I don't think podcasting was my idea. Was it Brooke? Were you the one? Brooke, as in so many things, Brooke had the inspiration for this. And I thought that's a really good idea. If we can't bring guests to campus, let's talk with them at distance, and a podcast seemed like the way to do this.
Yeah, I think my next question then would be, once you've hit on this great idea of a podcast, especially in a time of COVID, pandemic, and crisis, what helped you narrow your focus to faith and imagination in particular? What was kind of the idea behind that choice?
Yeah, good. Well, it didn't begin there, right? Remember that, Sam?
No,
I think our first 7 to 8 episodes, we were running a different podcast about the humanities generally, and we had some amazing guests. They were
absolutely
fantastic. But that podcast to me felt a little diffuse. It felt a little eclectic. It was kind of grab bag of everything under the sun in the humanities. And there was no real center to it. And I thought, how do we bring something kind of more thematically coherent to the podcast? And I'll add, my own academic work has been taking more of a spiritual and religious turn, a kind of a post-secular turn, if you will. And I thought it would be really fascinating, really enriching to talk with scholars and writers and artists and others about how their intellectual and creative lives intersect with their faith.
Absolutely. I would only just add that the reshaping or the refocusing of what we were doing and pairing it with a specific theme, with a specific set of questions that we were going to ask, not only led to more enriching conversations, but for me, really fascinating connections and bridge building between topics that, just by their own words, faith or religion or spirituality, from the outside and at first, those might seem quite specific and only interesting to a small selection of people, but the imagination part of our theme was vastly generative in terms of who we were able to talk to and what we were able to talk about. And that's really, I think, that captured what was good about the initial podcast, it being broad and about the human experience generally. That's why we study the humanities, but giving it that sort of connective tissue of, let's talk about those things in the specific context of faith. Faith in many things, not just in religion or a specific conception of God, but faith in people and in art, and how do those things talk to each other?
Yeah, great.
Yeah, Sam, I'm going to pick up on a key word you just used, bridge building, that really, and really this dialogue that creates bridges, that enables us to create that kind of connective tissue, I think was the other phrase you used. And that really, that's one of the strengths I would think of this podcast, is that our socio-political climate being as sharply polarized and divided as it is, with little apparent attempt at bipartisan discourse, that we live in a time where we have a great need for dialogue across difference, and certainly even differences in even faith and what we affirm as what we put our faith and trust in. So as the podcast has engaged thinkers from a broad spectrum of faith traditions, practices, and sects, it really seems to be a productive example of ecumenical discourse, of bridge building, of creating those connections. So what has the process of engaged dialogue in the podcast taught you, Matt, about thinking through the challenges of faith and imagination, and through the challenges we face in our own shared socio-political climate? And Sam, feel free to weigh in on this as well.
Yeah, great questions. I mean, there's a lot to say. I guess, first of all, just on bridge building, that really is a function, I think, of a humanities center, one of the functions of a humanities center. I mean, a humanities center is a laboratory for research, but it's also about creating relationships, networks, friendships across universities, across disciplines, et cetera. And here you're talking about BYU as a certain kind of university, a religious university, where the bridge building is not just a scholar to scholar, a scholar to student, but really is between, you know, kind of the academy, you know, kind of the intellect and life of faith in some way. We already had a faith and imagination lecture series, you know, trying to get at these kinds of questions that way. And so we thought, well, why not use that for a podcast? But you mentioned also, I'll just say one more thing, Sam, and then I'd love to hear, and Abby also, love to have you jump in. But the climate that we're in at present sociopolitically, which is just so tense, it's so fraught, you know, I generally find faith to be a unifying force between people, because there's something in faith that draws on a common human experience of what transcends us. And I also find that people of faith tend to be good listeners, since discerning to hear the voice of God or the word of God or the things of God requires really dedicated attention. So in that respect, I think and hope that a podcast like this one models the kind of unifying conversations I wish we all heard more frequently, you know, across our denominational differences or national differences or political differences or what have you. And this kind of thing becomes so different in our present era. You know, it's difficult to love one's neighbor when they vote differently or think differently about global warming or whatever it may be. But I believe, and I've seen this in my own faith community, that the things that we share can transcend the things that divide us. And I've also found that I'm moved to be a better person often by the examples of service and kindness and sacrifice of people who I know think differently than I do about many things. And that always causes me to be less judgmental. So I guess, in short, too lengthy an answer, but I like to think that a podcast like this one touches on at least some of what is best about people, about who they are and how they live and the God they worship and the people that they want to be. And that reminds me of why I want to keep trying to reach common ground.
Yeah, I really appreciate that answer. And I love that phrase of, I hope we, and I would share this hope that we would hope that what has been discussed and what will continue to be discussed here is a representation of what the best potential there is to build those connections. I guess my answer to this question sort of cues up another question that I have too, just about in reflecting on what this podcast has been able to do and what we can, you know, continue to hope and work for it to do in the future of, it seems to me that where we're at in large part in terms of sociopolitical climate of tension is also a result of crisis, of difficulty just outside of the foibles of what humans choose to do or not to do. You know, we've been living through a pandemic. Crisis is all around. And I think that's certainly a large part of what generates tension in these sorts of human domains of politics and social issues. But it also, crisis, things like that, they also are generative of spiritual experiences of spiritual thoughts and discussions, good and bad being, you know, I guess, difficult or not difficult, enriching or harrowing. That's sort of what I mean when I say good or bad. Right. But for you, do you feel like, and Abby, I'll be interested to hear, you know, from you about this, is this theme of crisis, I see it littered across a lot of the episodes that we've done on this podcast. Is that just a result of where we're at in, you know, where we were in 2020 and where we're still sitting in 2021? Or are these topics that we talk about on the podcast inherently connected to existential challenges, existential questions, and just conditions of crisis?
You want first crack at that, Abby?
Sure. I'm in thinking through this communal grief that I think we've all been working through in 2020 and 2021, that we are group grieving, that we've all experienced trauma, varying levels certainly, some more acutely than others. But this sense that in faith traditions that there is beauty through suffering, there's beauty in suffering, and then there's beauty after suffering. And that it's that intersection, I think, of the faith necessary to push forward into the unknown and to believe that it will all be worth it, that there can be beauty in, through, and after suffering. But also that we have the imagination necessary to believe and to think as to what that kind of beauty would look like and to what kind of beauty we aspire. And so I think that intersection generates a real synergy that isn't possible if we just sought to have imagination on one hand and then faith on the other, and we kept them in two separate boxes.
I love your emphasis there on beauty and thinking about the experience you've been through in terms of beauty, either the beauty for which we long, things we took for granted that now seem so beautiful, right? The beauty of persons that have been lost, loved ones, friends, that's really profound. I would add to this, I think that the nature of questions that involve faith, especially as they extend into kind of our experience, hence this, you know, sort of religious life hits the human experience and the humanities. I think faith also tends to prompt people to ask big questions in general, right? To face limitations, to seek big answers. Critics of faith, critics of religion, say that faith can develop us in a kind of a fantasy world, but that it's an avoidance mechanism for dealing with difficult things. But I find it to be just the opposite. I find that my own faith causes me to confront my own weaknesses, to experience crisis a bit more acutely, because it seems so very personal in some cases. I caused, you know, certain things in my life that shouldn't be there. It also caused me to grapple more earnestly with questions of life and death, and to try to become a better person than the person I presently am. So there's something dynamic about faith. I think that deepens our character. So I would expect that in a podcast like this one, we'd always have conversations like this. It just so happens that we began it during a pandemic.
Yeah, I would definitely agree that the pandemic certainly shaped not only us, but also the conversations that we've had over the past year and a half. And I think talking of shape and maybe form, we can move into our next question here about the varying genres and forms that we were able to explore, even blessed, I think, to explore in the podcast conversation. Anything from storytelling to pottery, poetry, essays, scholarly articles, memoirs, travel writing, that this kind of multiplicity of forms, I won't say is unique to the post-secular conversation, but we seem to have been able to get at it in interesting ways. And as a scholar yourself of literary format, what do you feel was most provocative, perhaps, about the forms that we encountered through conversation, and then how these artists and scholars are choosing to use different types of forms and their affordances to express their faith and their discipline?
Yeah, right. Good. Good question. We talk to such a variety of people who negotiate this kind of question in such different ways. I mean, you know, obviously in sort of Mako Fujimura, the artist, you know, and also who works with this broken pottery, you know, that Japanese art kintsugi that puts them back together again. You know, but Mark Knight talking about faith in the 19th century novel, or Mark Eaton, faith in the 20th century novel, or Richard McLaughlin, right, faith in the concept of Holy Saturday and the poetry of R.S. Thomas. Sarah Bachelard, right? The contemplative life and our relationship with God, how it changes our own life stories. I mean, form comes up again and again and again in these. You know, what really, I could talk a lot about the scholarship that people we've spoken with, but I will say one theme that's really moved me about the conversations throughout with all of our guests. I get especially excited and when the things that one studies spill over into the way that one lives, right? You know, when life comes to imitate art. So when the study of things of faith carry into the practice of faith, when the things that these scholars have been writing about, reading about, clearly bear a manifestation in how they live, that's what most excites me. So I love the diversity of forms, but I especially love the mobility of the forms, right? Their ability to get outside of someone's work into someone's life. That's what I found most provocative about our conversations.
That you're stealing the thoughts right out of my head, Matt. It's so okay, and this is exactly the thing that I would have sort of paired up with if, you know, answering this question that Abby asked. The really uniqueness of the fact that in the scholarship that we've been able to discuss and the forms that we've been able to encounter in this podcast, I've observed, just like you said, Matt, is the lived experience of the scholar, of the person doing the study, has become in as much of a form worthy of analysis as a text or a piece, an artifact or something like that. And to me, I think that's quite a unique model, one that we haven't necessarily seen in academic scholarship for a really long time, or at least not in the last, you know, decades or so, where it seems we've adopted a model of trying to imitate sort of the objective observer of our texts and the interjection of self as a formative piece in that analysis has at least traditionally seemed to have been something to avoid. But I've been impressed by the ways in which, like you said, Matt, our scholars that we've been able to interview, and just scholars working in this intersection of faith and literature, it seems almost inherent to the nature of study. And I would even argue, and this would be my question, do you think that that is inherent to scholarship outside of spirituality? Is that synergy of personal experience of the private and the public, is that something that is, I guess, replicable outside of this specific field of literature, of faith and imagination that we've been investigating so far in this podcast?
Yeah, it's an important question. I mean, I think that a lot of the, what you're talking about, kind of the objectivity of a lot of scholarship in the humanities, which really in some ways models itself after the objectivity in the sciences, you
Absolutely.
Know, and, you know, serious research demands kind of a serious approach, you know, somewhat impersonal in some ways. I think in the past decade or two, you find more of this intersection between the personal and the objective, you know, in scholarship, the so-called ontological turn, the turn toward, you know, kind of, you know, the expression of being. A lot of that you find like in race studies, for example, or
Absolutely.
Gender studies, where people talk about, look, here's my subject position, here's my story, and here's how it factors into what I study and why. There's more of that these days. In that respect, what we're doing with the expression of sort of the spiritual life or faith and the life of scholarship is an extension of what you see. But I think it's also, for me at least, there's something especially powerful about the places one can go, the personal depths to which one can go in a religious or spiritual context. It draws on different things, I think, in how we think and feel. And so I'd say, yeah, you see it elsewhere, but I think you see it especially in people who bring their own stories into their lives of faith.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. There's something so alive about a critical approach that embraces the seeker just as much as what they seek. That really, and in that kind of embracing, it doesn't leave you where you are, but instead asks you to go beyond where you currently are. And so going to your continued use of the word dynamic and really moving between these two spaces, whether that's the intimate and the private or the public and the more communal. And indeed, that kind of speaks to the tension even in post-secular studies between spirituality as an exercise and then religion as a sort of communal group worship in which we seek together to rise or to transcend. And really kind of thinking through almost in a world where spirituality is increasingly privatized and participation in communal public worship or religion, broadly defined, is dwindling, what can we make perhaps of faith's continued ability to address both the public and the private, even concerns? So thinking towards faith's ability to maybe impact any number of spheres in which we have concerns, whether that's the environmental with climate change, or whether that's the sociopolitical, or even cultural in the ways in which we're divided.
Yeah, great, great, great question. First of all, I don't know quite how you solve some of our biggest problems without some kind of investment of faith. I mean, here, just even meaning faith in the secular sense, belief in a project we can achieve politically or that we can achieve socially.
Absolutely.
That we
can achieve,
right? I mean, that requires some kind of belief in a better world. So faith is a resource for anybody in any context, I mean, religious or not. I also think, though, that people, it's true that the religious life is not as common a part of the American experience now as it may have been, say, 40 or 50 years ago. There are a few people who were unaffiliated, whereas before they, you know, would claim at least some kind of affiliation, whether it was wholehearted or not. But I do think that people remain deeply invested in spiritual life, that they remain seekers, even if they don't have a home. In that respect, I continue to think of the spiritual life, small s, mm-hmm. as what connects people across diverse traditions. And, you know, I believe, you know, in a spiritual life, capital S, you know, as human beings, as children of God, who share something profound across their differences. They come from a common place. And that seeks, at least, that causes me at least to seek to continue to find where those points of convergence are.
I'll just add, in thinking about the guests that we've had, I feel like I've been able to experience the merging of sort of lowercase s spirituality in the things that I've heard from guests and been able to incorporate that into the larger sort of capital S spirituality that I try to live because of my particular faith tradition and religion that I practice. The phrase holy envy, you know, of being able to retranslate the things that I've been able to hear in these episodes from scholars like Michael Hurley, just studying poetry and talking about the various works of these poets long gone, centuries old, into how I would approach a spiritual question or thinking about that in my worship services on Sunday. That translation is very much alive, I think, in me as someone who used to be, an active producer of this podcast, and now as a subscriber and listener.
Thank you for subscribing, by the way, Sam.
I feel like I would get fired, or maybe I would be in big trouble if I wasn't a subscriber.
Very bad karma, Sam. Very bad karma.
Thinking ahead perhaps now. So in trying to think about this pivot and perhaps how we can continue to push towards a more dynamic understanding of the lowercase s spirituality and then uppercase spirituality that we all seek to live in our varying ways. Matt, do you have any thoughts on questions or topics that you hope to explore in season 2 of our podcast and where you might hope for the conversation to go?
You know what? Honestly, for me, the conversations are as engaging as, well, the conversations revolve around the guests. And I found our guests, I should just read a list of them. I won't, but I really want to just, all 22 we've had thus far have been phenomenal guests. And the thing I most want is to keep, finding these amazing people and hopefully have them keep saying yes to talking to us on the podcast. They've been fantastic. So partly the answer is it really is a function of serendipity. You know, who's out there? Who do we come across? Who could we, kind of contact? Who had the time to talk to us? But there will be things I'm interested in doing. I'd love to hear from some people about, what do they make of some of the best things they read in the course of a year. I'd love to have a conversation where a guest and I talk about our 5 favorite books of the year on a given subject, like the faith and imagination intersection, or, talking about things that are topical. We talk about people's work a lot. I wouldn't mind. I'd like to have a conversation with guests where we talked about a thing that's in the news, in the air, something recently written that neither of us wrote. How do we respond or react to it? I think that would be something that I would maybe like to explore doing also. And then some more of these in-person conversations where we both have microphones in the same room as opposed to being on Zoom. That, looking forward to very much too.
That's certainly the prayer. Sam, as a listener and subscriber, do you have hopes for where season 2 might go or topics perhaps that are on your mind and you'd like to hear Matt discuss?
Well, I'll kind of copy Matt's answer, but with a bit of a twist. I think it's been interesting as a listener of the past handful of episodes once I stopped working as a producer. Serendipity has been involved in how the podcasts have been impactful to me as a listener. I think when the episode appears on my feed, it's been interesting to see how some of the episodes correspond to things I'm going through or transitions that I'm making into my life. I'm about to move across the country to start a graduate program in Virginia, and being able to hear like Mark Knight, for example, talk about just literary studies generally, it really just ignited a new wave of excitement for what I hope to try and do. Though as of now, my field is not necessarily spirituality and faith and literature, I feel so energized by what's come across in that serendipitous sort of providential way of just being a listener. And I'm sure that that's been the experience of our other listeners. And That would be my answer, I guess, in short.
What do you want, Abby, from the next season?
Well, I certainly...
You'll be producing it, so, right?
Yes. I echo, I think, what's been shared. And further, I love how much this podcast, to me, has been an example of generous scholarship. So truly kind scholarship. And that kindness is something that is, and this might be trite to say, but becoming increasingly more and more rare, I think, in our public discourse and in the way that we interact with each other as human beings. And so... to be able to hear that kind of kind, generous thinking about some of the most important questions that one can ask about what it means to be human and what it means to find a meaningful life that one can truly live and thrive in.
That's a great point. We have had, I think, exceptionally generous guests. I've been very grateful for that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so I guess it will be on us to wrap this up this time. So thank you very much, Matt, for having this conversation with us. And yeah, for really best wishes and blessings for season two.
Thank you. And thank you to you both, Abby and Sam, for your excellent work in producing, and to Brooke, who does all things in the center so well, including producing these episodes. I'm
absolutely
so grateful.
Thank you.
Our pleasure. At the close of season one of the BYU Faith and Imagination podcast, we'd like to thank our generous and thoughtful guests. In order of their episode's release, Lori Branch, David Mahan, Christina Bieber-Lake, David Perrin, Sarah Bachelard, Michael D. Hurley, Ann Snyder, Makoto Fujimura, Richard McLaughlin, Arthur Holder, Romana Huck, Deanna Thompson, Van Gessel, Deborah Reinstra, Belden C. Lane, Mark Eaton, Mary Froelich, Jeffrey Bilbro, Mark Knight, Tish Harrison Warren, Kelsey Osgood, and Rebecca Ann Lamb. We'd also like to thank our listeners and subscribers, and we look forward to what season two may bring. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Faith and Imagination podcast. This podcast is sponsored by the BYU Humanities Center and the College of Humanities at Brigham Young University, and is produced and edited by Brooke Brown and Abby Thatcher. The music for this podcast is composed by Ethan Wickman and is performed by Nicholas Phillips on Albany Records. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave us a review on your podcast platform. And if you're interested in other episodes or would like to know more about the BYU Humanities Center, check out our website at humanitiescenter.byu.edu. Thanks again for listening.